Become a KPFT major donor today. Call our development director at 713-526-4000 to join KPFT's major donor program. KPFT is indispensable, but we need you to keep our blood pumping. This is KPFT Houston, Texas.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Technology Bites.
Welcome to the show.
Isn't it?
You recorded it. You went and got it. No, good God.
It looks legit. Seems legit.
It's an elaborate prank. I think Flicted's trolling us. All right.
I assume we had loopiness last week.
Oh, you missed that.
I missed it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So
that just sounds horrible. Just the 8 seconds I endured of it just now is.
Last week, we were doing. We're doing the info shot. Peter Hughes was doing the info shot, and something went haywire with the connection to his Skype or Google, whatever it is. And right when he said the word isn't, it went into a perpetual loop. And unfortunately for us, really all we could do was laugh. So there was quite a long period of time of just trying to regain our composure. And of course, Flicked, being who Flicked is, realized that he had the keys to chaos, and could pop that up anytime because it was just stuck, and pop that up and was basically using it as a you know, as a sample.
Torture could, device for you, it sounds like.
Oh, it was horrifying. But anyway, so we have that, and I can't believe that it's still going on when he launches the Google Hangout. So that's kind of amazing.
So we don't have Pete.
So yeah, if I can't get Pete with that, I mean, I don't know what we did to get him back last week. But anyway, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And that's it. Because Lee is out. He's writing some super secret story that we're going to hear about in a couple of weeks. He's covering something having to do with something I'm sure I can't even say. And Groove House is in Florida for, I don't know why, hurricanes.
We also can't say.
And Pete's not here because, well, he isn't available.
Isn't,
so we're going to work on that. Welcome to the show. This is ridiculous. I can't, I mean, have you reboot? Is it the Google Hangout or is it stuck on your computer or what?
I don't know. I just shut down Google Chrome and restarted it to see if that'll fix it.
Perfect show.
So you haven't rebooted or restarted Chrome since that happened?
Hey, YouTube, today we're going to talk about...
This podcast works.
Don't know what's going on. All right, so at any rate, we do have a geek gathering coming up this Friday night at Cons, so we hope you'll join us for that. I think I might even have that promoted on the website. I don't know.
2808 Mile Limit Drew from like 7:30 on.
Yeah, so we have that to look forward to. Yes, yeah, so we do have a flyer up for that. So you can go to Geek
Radio. Do you have a theme? Is there a theme on the flyer? Have you not seen the flyer yet?
I've got tired of creating new ones, so I've...
Oh, there we go. So Star Trek again.
Star Trek theme poster for the Geek Gathering.
We'll build a communicator. That was kind of already on the radar anyway.
Really?
I picked up like a first... I don't even think it's gone to print yet, but I answered a question and did something and got a book that's called like How to Make Your Own Hacker Gadget. It sounds kind of lame, but what it does is it takes like this little battery-powered... I think it's like a TP-Link 3040 or something like that. But it's a little bitty router with some wireless thing, an Ethernet port, USB port, and it's about as big as a deck of cards, and it's got a little lithium-ion battery built into it. So it's made to stick like a little 3G or 4G, you know, stick in there and then be a hotspot, a personal hotspot. But you can go in there, put some open WRT firmware on there, and then start loading up all kinds of other stuff, and it can be like a wireless Sentry or a wireless attack platform or whatever, but it's extremely cheap to get a hold of, and it's pretty easy to do, so we will build one of those Friday.
Will.
If we don't have anything else going on. Yeah, I've built one of them, and then I've got some spare parts. The other one should show up tomorrow at some point. Probably not by drone, even though I've got my fingers crossed. Not yet.
All right, so while Afflicted continues to struggle with that, it was going to be a bad enough tonight with all these missing people, but now with the
and we've got a call. Unless that was just
I don't know double tap that or drop that.
Drop
make sure
it.
It goes away. Yeah,
make
I don't
sure
know
we
what
do this
that
correctly.
Is.
It's been a while. Gone.
All right.
Isn't
impressive. That is impressive.
Or Pete could actually legitimately be stuck in a loop. Should we check? Have you guys checked on him in the last week?
Well, he called when it happened last week. We still managed to get him back somehow, so we still had Peter Hughes on the air. I don't know that he got to hear the isn't, but it was there. So September 2nd, technology. He's got the links up. Okay, so. Huh.
All my devices are shutting down. I'm going into extreme power saving modes. Plural. Just a failure in bringing the appropriate cords tonight.
That's just unfortunate.
Yeah, and then it was kind of a weird lead up for the show, too. Usually it's pretty quiet before we go on air, but the studio was just a den of activity, I thought.
Really?
Maybe that's also someone that didn't have like a laptop to be buried in backup, so maybe I just never noticed that stuff. But it seemed like there's a lot of action pre-show, just people walking around, you know, stuff going on.
That doesn't seem terribly uncommon. It seemed a little disconcerting. There was someone in the lobby who had put their computer away for safekeeping, and it was so safe he couldn't get it back.
Maybe that's why.
But I think
feel
I was
weird.
A little distressing. Just somebody that was separated from their technology and unable to get to it. Maybe Peter Hughes should call in.
Ooh, we've got that technology too.
You could call in on the regular phone. And we could do it that way.
I've almost got a one key here. I'm missing the one key we need, but I bet I can make do.
Isn't this better?
Oh, that's better. Hello, Peter. Way to start
I'm Peter
with
Hughes.
My goodness, you're so apparently the Google Hangout was still going when we brought you back up.
Isn't that right?
We tried, you know, Afflicted contacted me, started a Hangout connecting to me. I started one and he came into that one. So I don't know what, apparently we have broken Google Hangouts.
It's a Hangout storm.
Maybe that's why they changed their logo.
Yeah, I thought I had gotten, I thought I actually went and checked all my settings when that popped up. So I'm like, okay, I finally got hijacked and something's redirecting my browser to like someone that can't quite get the Google logo correct. But no, I don't know if I like it.
I'm not looking at it right. I can't bear to look at it. Well, welcome to the show, Peter Hughes. Really glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
It's, you know, I think, you know, you would assume that over the years, working this out to get Peter on the air from San Antonio via the internet would get smoother, but in a weird way, it's gotten less smooth.
It's more difficult and more difficult.
I mean, the internet continues, or technology continues to throw challenges at us, even when everything's supposed to be getting simpler and easier and more fluid. It still continues to be stupefying.
As stuff falls off the wall behind Jay here in the studio. 94.1
well,
KPFT
on the plus, on the plus side, so insider stuff for people. I have gotten a hold of a Mac Mini, and I think that I can use that week that I'm going to try and get installed in the studio and hardwired in to the network. And to the board, so that then maybe that will get around this, because it'll have, you know, ideally it'll have a fixed IP, and it'll be all wired in, and so it won't have those kinds of issues.
I'm sure it isn't a guarantee.
I don't know how that has Flicted rebooted his computer since all this has happened.
No, I have not.
Because I am seriously wondering if the deal is not on your machine.
Well, it seems very likely.
Had you opened the lid since you shut it down last show? Okay. Something's amiss with the internet. I lost all IPv4 with Comcast for like an hour and a half at my place. And it was weird. So I could route IPv6, so I couldn't figure out what was going on. Like, I would hit some websites, it would go through. I could get through to Google, so it quickly told me who's IPv4, who's IPv6 enabled. And then suddenly IPv4 came back up, and instead of having like 30 or 40 megs down, I had 177 megs down from several different sites, which is just odd. I don't even think I'm supposed to have it that fast. So if anyone knows what's going on, put something on our site. Actually, don't say anything.
Yeah, I had a similar thing with, well, or not, I didn't get faster speed that I didn't expect, but Time Warner over the weekend, we had a problem, and so I, you know, went online to check using my iPad that has LTE, and it said that the problem was with my modem. Everything was fine except, you know, with my modem. So contact tech support. So I contact them, and the first thing after I put in my account info is you get routed to a recording that says, yeah, there's a known outage in your area, and you know, we'll let you know when it's done. It's like all they had to do is put that on the site, and we could have saved the phone call. But anyway, so I would call that a system status fail for Time Warner on that one.
You guys are looking down the barrel of getting Google pretty soon, though, so it's kind of hard to have too much pity. Like, whatever trials and tribulations you've got right now, they should be fairly short-lived.
Well, I'm not doing too bad anyway. I mean, I've got 300 megs down and 25 up.
Man, way to crush my 177. Just almost double it.
Yeah, so that's the other reason why, my presumption is that a lot of the issues are on the KPFT network side, and that when we get, you know, if we're lucky, since it should be business internet. Hopefully they have an actual external IP that we can put a machine on and then maybe do some direct connection stuff, put a Jabber client or something on it and see about doing audio direct, you know, basically point to point instead of whatever way that Google or Skype routes you. So we'll see. I've got an email. I emailed Ernesto to get in touch with everybody I need to get this thing wired up, and we'll see what we can do, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. So just in time for fundraiser, we'll have a better connection.
Behind the scenes with Technology Bites.
There you go.
All right, so Flicted, have you got everything else working the way it's supposed to?
Yes.
All right. Well, how about let's do the Technology Bites Info Shot live from San Antonio. Take it away, Info Shot. I said, take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Now, I know all of you have just barely recovered from all of the drama and tension that we've gone through since Jade Helm, since Texas was taken over by military coup. Oh, these many days. Notice that? That one's gone totally silent. Not one of those idiots has stepped up to, I don't know, apologize for being stupid. But, okay, enough of that. Sorry. Enough of that. I don't want to go too far with that, because in case your tinfoil hat has cooled off too much, did you know that the world is going to end on September 23rd, 2015? This is a breaking story. I got this from BuzzFeed, so it must be true. Actually, you know, and this one's science-y-esque. The date was prophesied by Sir Isaac Newton. He interpreted Daniel 9:25 to mean that that September 23rd, 2015 would be the day. Let's see. Also, just in case you need something with a little more of a conspiracy tinge, French Foreign Affairs Minister Laurent Fabius, a member of the Bilderberg Group, wink, proclaimed on March 13th, 2014, that the world had, quote, 500 days to avoid climate chaos. And 500 days from May 13th, 2014 is September 24th, 2015. It's going to happen as a result of a convergence of many events, including the restart of the CERN Large Hadron Collider, the conclusion of Jade Helm 15, a collision with Comet 67P, and President Obama meeting with the Pope at the White House, and it lines up with the fourth of the blood moons, which, oh, anyways, I just thought it was funny. There's the article, you can get the link, like many of them, you can get the link from geekradio.com. It's posted up on the front page. Some of these are fun, especially when things sort of line up and when they can put something pseudo-legitimate at the beginning, like, I don't know, throwing in Sir Isaac Newton's name. It can be entertaining. But we'll move on to less conspiracy-minded things. This one, last week we talked about the death of Flash. You know, it was a time where it was going to be dead. You know, Chrome has made it where it's not an inherent part, or, you know, it's not automatic with that, and everybody hates Flash ads. But Wired had a pushback that said the death of Flash may not be the best thing for the web. Now you can pause Flash ads in the Chrome browser. Amazon has banned Flash across its network of sites. Facebook security chief officer Alex Stamos called for the death of Flash 2. And, of course, you know, iPhones and iPads haven't had Flash on them for a long time, or if ever. The thing about the part of the thing with this, though, that they're throwing in some I don't know how you put it. They're throwing in a little wrench. With Google putting the brakes on Flash in Chrome, of course, advertisers will need to seek other ways to get their messages out. So part of this is maybe the idea that Google has done this so that the people who want to put ads, who used to put money in Flash ads, will put them on, say, Google AdWords. According to Ben Edelman, a professor at Harvard Business School, He worries that flash start advertisers do opt to advertise more with Google, Facebook, or other tech biggies. They may choose to advertise less with publishers, with other publishers who are also dependent on ad money to stay afloat, and that could mean fewer choices for readers. To be clear, the death of Flash would not mean the end of annoying video pop-ups and animated ads for good. On Chrome, for instance, Flash ads converted to HTML5 will still work just fine. But you know, they're also essentially, this is like the buggy whip manufacturers. How we should feel sorry for them. This article is how we should feel sorry for them in a post buggy world. That there will be agencies and businesses that have built their stuff around Flash ads who would suffer for it. But, you know, the internet is all about the future, and it replaced other things that went away, and nobody cried for them. And I think we'll do fine without Flash, especially now that a lot of tech biggies have gotten together to create a new open source, you know, wide open usable video format, which we're way overdue. The roster on it is some of the biggest names in tech: Amazon, Cisco, Google, Intel, Microsoft, Mozilla, and Netflix are teaming up to revamp the way video works over the internet. They joined as the Alliance for Open Media to create a new open source video format. So that's all three major web browser makers and some of the biggest players in online video. Cisco, part of why Cisco's in this is not so much from the networking thing, but they make WebEx, which is a big business video conferencing tool. Apple and Facebook are conspicuously absent from the group. Facebook, I don't know if it's that big a deal. Apple hopefully will either come around or at least support it. New format has not yet been named, but it could make it easier for web giants to move away from Adobe Flash. It's going to be designed specifically for delivering streaming video over the web with the aim of making it suitable for low-powered devices, and it will also support some form of copy protection, which is a must for companies like Netflix. The new format will be royalty-free, so there's a plus, meaning any company can build software for creating or converting video in the format without paying a fee. According to a blog post from Mozilla, the plan is to release the standard under Apache License 2.0, which is one of the most permissive open source licenses available, because it specifically includes the use of all relevant patents and allows code covered by the license to be used within commercial and proprietary projects. So we'll see what happens as this goes along. That should open things up, and it should make it a lot easier to put video on websites and to get video working for more people and devices, which never a bad idea there. You know, if you've done anything with video on the web, the problem you have is if you look at a chart of what formats the major browsers support, like for HTML5 video, all four of the major browsers fit where there's two formats they support and one they don't. And then by the one they don't support is enough to basically kind of hose any sort of easy solution, because it's a patchwork as far as which company will support. And so hopefully an open source one, the demand should go a long ways towards making them actually use it, you know, kind of like GIFs and JPEGs. Nobody's trying to come up with their own separate format for that, because everybody uses the other one. You know, GIFs, there was that threat in the 90s where there was supposedly some sort of copyright that then went away, where GIFs were not going to be able to be used, or GIFs, or however you want to say it. But that disappeared, even though the Ping came along, which I think Ping is a better format. But, you know, you can still do a GIF. And in other news, we've followed this along, and finally we're at the point where Intel has released their full lineup of Skylake processors and with their info, and it lets us know by when. They also said when they're going to be available to manufacturers. And so you can expect, in the example I found for Macs, early 2016 is likely for most Macs. They released the detail. Intel released the detail information about the Skylake processors ahead of the IFA 2015 in Berlin. The sixth generation chips will deliver CPU and GPU performance improvements and longer battery life. The big thing is faster processor, slightly faster processor, plus long battery life. You know, low power consumption and long battery life. The new lineup of Core M processors appropriate for like the 12-inch Retina MacBook will provide up to 10 hours of battery life, between 10 and 20% faster CPU performance, and up to 40% faster graphics compared to Broadwell, like what it's got now. CPU World accurately shared Core M3, Core M5, and Core M7 specs last week, with all three families of chips, including Intel HD 515 graphics, 4 megs of L3 cache, and 4.5-watt thermal design power. With that, the TDP thing, Core M processors have configurable thermal design power, which allows for performance and heat output to be adjusted. That way they can run as fast, you know, it lets them boost their clock or not to and boost their power depending on the situation. The Core M3, M5, and M7 can be run at 3.5 to 3.8 watts or be increased to 7 watts to get higher CPU clock speeds. For that current 12-inch MacBook, Apple boosted the 900 megahertz chip to 1.1 gigahertz and on the base one, the 1.2 gigahertz to 1.3 gigahertz on the high end. Ars Technica notes that Core M processors should be available to Apple and other PC makers now, meaning that Core M3, M5, and M7 powered notebooks should begin shipping within the next few months. However, given that the 12-inch MacBook just launched in April, it remains uncertain if Apple's willing to release updated models as soon or hold off until 2016. The thing I would say on that is there's started to be some deals on the MacBook, the just plain the Retina MacBook, and I think that's a sign that Apple wants to sell them. They want to sell the ones that they've got, but that they want to I bet they want to move it up, because the biggest complaint about that particular one is really processor based, is that it doesn't seem to have the performance that you would want for what you pay for it and what you get. So so good news on that one, that Skylake is out, and you know there's more, you know, that they'll update the processors in other parts of the line. I used the MacBook Retina as a good example. There's an article that goes into all the different MacBooks and desktops that could be affected. So if you're interested in that particular aspect, you can go find the article on geekradio.com on the front page. And finally, Uber. There was a lawsuit about Uber, about whether they're employees or independent contractors. And a judge has just granted the drivers a class action status in that lawsuit. So instead of it being about one or two people who sued, now it's about lots and lots of people. Fast Company has an article on it. They say Uber makes software. It's a technology company, and any threat to this model threatens to turn Uber into a transportation company, which is much less lucrative. So far, most legal hiccups over the company's workers who provide their own cars, gas, schedules, and benefits have pertained only to specific drivers, such as when the California Labor Commission ordered the company to pay more than $4,000 to a driver that it ruled had been misclassified as an independent contractor. On Tuesday, a U.S. district judge granted Uber drivers class action status in a lawsuit that claims they were incorrectly categorized as contract workers, which means that that misclassification may now apply to tens of thousands of drivers in California. If successful, the suit could influence the structure of all sorts of companies that use an Uber employment model, many of which have already started converting contractors to employees. In July, Uber filed a 52-page motion opposing the class action status, which included notes from 400 drivers who praised the job for offering them flexibility and independence. I'm going to make a new app. I think the big new app isn't an Uber-style app. I think it's a new app that to help people who've worked for these different, you know, hot unicorn app companies, to help people to sue them and get into class actions. I'm going to call it Suber. And And I figure I can make a fortune on it. I'm kidding. But it does raise the interesting question, and this one's certainly open to the whole panel. Is these companies like Uber are successful or are a big deal and have a lot of capital, but is part of their success because they're taking advantage of their workers, or is this really a new thing and a new type of worker that is the problem that they fall between, you know, independent contractor and employee? Anyone? Isn't? have you guys dealt with either you? I guess Lee and Groovehouse are not there today, right?
That is correct.
Cool.
That's cool.
That's why it's quieter. Yeah,
quiet.
Have you guys used Uber? Or
I used Uber one time when I was in San Diego for Comic-Con because they had a huge presence out there. A lot of the cars were decorated or special, you know, Uber cars there. And I enjoyed the service. It was, you know, I could see the car approaching. I could see it on my little Uber app. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you don't have to pull money out of your pocket. You don't have to think about it. It just charges you what that charges you. What I didn't like is that the driver didn't seem to be able to tell me how much it was going to cost. And the app didn't seem to tell me how much it was going to, I didn't see that it was telling me how much it was going to cost. So I just assumed it would be in a certain range and said, okay, I'll just go with it. And it wasn't terribly expensive. It was like $15, get a couple of miles.
I've ridden a few times. I've never used it for my own phone, though. Like, I've never installed the app. And mainly because I guess they probably short everything up, but there was a pretty decent Uber talk at not this last DEF CON, but a year ago, just about beating up the app. And then there was also that story that kind of made the rounds where there was an Uber exec that was saying, like, hey, do you want to see a cool trick? Watch, we can track this person. And, you know, they showed exactly where this person was in a cab, en route. A friend at a party knew the person they were tracking in the cab, and I think it was like a journalist. They called him and said, hey, we can see where you are. And, you know, that's just extremely creepy. So they got slapped on the wrist, but there are definitely privacy concerns. And as far as, like, the amount of data that they just kind of, like, put out there in the wild about you when you install the app, it's, you know, there's a lot of it. But that's probably the same for all the apps. So you've got to balance your paranoia level with how bad you want to catch a ride.
Yeah, the thing to me on, you know, the cool features, you know, the, like, knowing where the car is relative to where you are and all that stuff, I'm really sort of surprised that, you know, that mass transit companies haven't looked at something along those lines.
Well, even Yellow Cab, and I'm, you know, I'm mostly two wheels. So, you know, if I need to get to the airport or if I need to, you know, go on a super rainy, ugly day, you know, I'll call a cab. And Yellow Cab just finally got it to where when you call in, they'll say, like, hey, we see that your address is at this location, you know, push 1 to be picked up here. But the thing is, they always do it from your last picked up, so that automatically kills any round trips. And then there for a while, I got randomly picked up, I think, at some Continental Club event. And for 3 months, it just kept wanting to pick me up at the Continental Club. So I'm wondering if Uber isn't the one that's pushing them to do this, but they still, at least here in Houston, they still have a really long way to go before you can just glance at a phone and know kind of when someone's going to show up.
Hello.
Hello, am I back?
You're back. Were you gone? How long were you gone? We were talking Uber.
When Barrett said that he took a yellow cab, that he called a yellow cab, and then it went silent.
Sorry about that.
It's big transportation.
I can't imagine why we're having technical difficulties. Everything is usually so flawless around here. All right.
You just disappeared again.
Wow. Okay. I can hear you. Are you still there? We should do a ping test on Pete.
Ping.
Ping, Pete.
Tracer T.
I guess he's gone again. Nice. I will say that the internet here seems to be dropping out, so maybe that has something to do with it. Not positive, but that could have something to do with it.
What could have something to do with it?
The internet dropping out.
I would think that might have an effect. Yeah. See, that's why I want to get a machine hardwired in.
But our internet's dropping out, not just your connection.
I just wonder, though, is that some of it is I don't know the full network setup, but what I'm hoping is to have something that's maybe outside the firewall, outside of the router that's serving you guys with Wi-Fi and that stuff, and hopefully so that it's just sort of part of the LAN and then wired to the
Yeah, I'm not using Wi-Fi. I bring a cable and plug it in.
Yeah, but like I said, with like a fixed IP though.
It's probably, I'm still getting a DHCP address. It's probably still inside the firewall or whatever. It's not external.
It's not totally external, but Flicted's jacked directly into the Matrix.
Cool. So, when was the last time his machine was rebooted though?
Flicted has complete uptime.
His
never
laptop
been rebooted.
Needs to be rebooted, reformatted, reloaded, and replaced.
No, my laptop's only been up for 15 days.
Really?
That's nothing.
That's like two shows, three shows.
Yeah, well, but we're running up on where two of those three have not been paragons of technical wonderfulness.
Well, I'm not using my MacBook Air for this kind of purpose, but I've been up for 55 days, and it's working.
Wow. I haven't slept for 10 days, because that would be too long.
And you're still working?
Ba-dum-bum. Did you get any rest on your vacation?
Not a whole lot, because the sun came up early, and we were up late. And, yeah.
Oh, but it's beautiful up there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really pretty. And, I took Pete's suggestion, and I hit on the way out and on the way back. I want to say it was called Toby's in Hartwick.
Hinkley.
Thank you. Yeah. I went there twice. I wanted to go to White Castle.
How did you ever get there if you can't remember what it's called even after having been there?
It's called Technology. I started on my apps when Pete was telling me in the studio that one night. And then I just said, hey, let's go here. And we did.
It also doesn't hurt that Toby's is like it's like Bucky's between Minneapolis and Duluth.
It's the only game in town is kind of what it looks like. And it's like it actually expands for forever. That's a really good comparison. It is kind of like Bucky's of the Midwest because you go and there's like a garden center and a truck stop and a gas station and a bakery and a tavern. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
Because a long time ago, it was the only place to stop on that particular trip for anybody who was heading up north. And so, of course, they benefited from it and expanded. So
I will say that T-Mobile has a lot of catch-up to do once you head north of there. There was, like, just even in the U.S., there were, like, gaping holes of no cell phone reception. And no, that's no LTE. That's no anything. No roaming. Just you're on your own. Good luck.
Wow, which is nice in a place where it could snow and you really are, like, at risk of your life and for a large chunk of the year, but obviously not when you were there right now.
No, but I can see how it gets just really ugly up there, and I could see how it would just not want to be there come January. There's no way.
Well, the other thing, I thought of it after, when I didn't have a chance to communicate with you, I forgot to tell you to while you were there to try get a nut goodie. It's a candy bar that you can only really get. I think you can only really get in Minnesota for some reason. The company that makes them is in Minneapolis and is a big – it's Pearson. They make candy that you can buy all over the country, but the nut goodies are just only in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'd missed that on that. I mean, there were a series of near misses. Apparently the state fair was going on when I was up there, which was a really huge thing. So I didn't go to that, which actually might have turned out to be good because I heard it just gets super, super crowded. And then I was hanging out at a little brewery right across from – is it called like Target Field maybe? And – all these people with Astros jerseys start coming out. I'm like, oh, wow, there's an Astros game right there. So it was weird. I tried to get away from Texas, but Texas followed me.
Were you in Canada or Alaska?
No, so it was a weird – I was in Canada. I was in Canada, in Ontario, just kind of straight north. But I flew into Minneapolis and hung out in Minneapolis for a day or two on the way back. And then I drove Minneapolis and then, you know, planes and trains and boats and such. Broken
and
laptops.
Flying boats, right?
Yeah, flying boats with pontoons, boats with water runways, which is really cool. It's a cool trip. And I took a brand new camera up there that Jay helped me pick out. And I got some really horrible – I got like two decent pictures. But what I really wanted to do – there
You're
were
welcome.
Several. Thank you. No, that's not – it wasn't Jay pointing in that direction. But I was excited, you know, because the main thing was I didn't want to drop my cell phone into the drink or drop it, you know, just completely lose it. So the camera was about the same price or less than a cell phone. So that was good. But I got up there and I couldn't figure out how to take movies. I put it in movie mode and it said, like, press the movie picture to take a movie. And I looked all over this camera and I could not find
it.
Yeah,
no internet access and no manual.
No manual, no internet access. Nothing but this tiny little bitty.
He bought the camera days before he left.
Yeah, in my defense. It wasn't quite as – I'm not quite as inept as that might sound. But, yeah, there's this tiny little button that has a little red dot that Jay was like, oh, push this. I'm like, oh, that's what I was – I figured it was something stupid, but I just didn't know it was like that. stupid. Because I was looking for a silver button on the back panel.
Yeah.
And on the top.
It has lots of big, shiny buttons. And it has this tiny little red button.
I've got it right here. Oh, do you want to take the camera button challenge? 30 seconds or less to find the movie button. Can you do it?
I'll try.
Okay.
I'm game.
Right. Well, we've already given him major clues. He's already going to be able to find
it. You don't even have to, like, all you've got to do, you don't have to turn the camera on, is just find the movie button.
All right, so Barrett's walking the camera back to Afflicted, and they'll see Afflicted. All right, so countdown 1, or 30, 29, 28, 27, 26,
He's
25.
He's looking at it enigmatically.
24. 23, 22.
Oh. Yeah, I heard you say the little red button. So.
Yeah, he
but we said, but you know that's a movie button by looking at it.
No, I would never have guessed that relates to anything except like...
Making everything turn red.
Eject something.
Yeah, if you're
going to
put one button on a device and that one button has one purpose and that's to start taking a movie,
Shouldn't
I would maybe
have,
like put
a movie
thing
camera
on there.
Or yeah. a film strip
Just
or
a
something.
Thought. Just something. And then look on top of the camera, and you see what on the top of the dial would look like a film strip or a movie. Pretty obvious, right?
Yeah,
you
can there's see a film like strip movie. Right there.
Yeah. So
and
you turn it to
like
that.
A stretched towel or something, some taffy.
No, that's for stretched towel picks. That's exactly what it is. Sony's gotten kind of, they're weird.
See, it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know now. I can never unsee that button now.
No. Well, you know, there's a great story about Cynthia's brushes with technology. One of the stories that stands out in my mind is her first digital camera. Her first digital camera that
was that from you?
She had a Pentax film camera, and she decided to go digital, so we bought a Pentax digital camera. You know, I don't know, 12 megapixels. So it was a nice camera, and it was actually better in terms of features. Had more features and was better camera than the one that I was shooting with at the time, And she would play with the camera, and every once in a while come running into my office at the home office and announce something that she had discovered about it. But then she came in with a very puzzled look on her face, and she was asking, let me see your camera, see if it's on here or not. She asked me, what's this cupcake button?
Help me out here. Oh, the hot flash?
No, over here.
I'm having hot flashes. Oh, that's funny.
It looks like it's the delete button. It's a little trash can with the lid half off.
It looks like a little cupcake.
She said, well, you know, being the baker that she is, she said, what's this cupcake button do? So now when she's like taking pictures with her camera and she's deleting photos, she goes, cupcake, cupcake, cupcake.
It's kind of like when you eat a cupcake, it disappears.
Kind of like that.
That's awesome. But you can delete as many of these as you want and
never gain weight. I mean, you actually gain room.
If only real cupcakes worked that way.
If only real cupcakes deleted fat.
So it's the bulimia button.
Oh.
Easy now.
Careful now. So
I can't find that button either on my camera. I'm not going to go looking now.
All right. So there's the news. There's an anecdote about Cynthia and an anecdote about Barrett.
Ooh, reminder of Geek Gathering.
Geek Gathering, another reminder, we're going to have a Geek Gathering.
7:30 this Friday. 7:30-ish to, you know, whenever. Cones, 2808 Milam at Drew.
In about 17 minutes, Mr. Robot will start.
Are they so?
You know, in a way, I'm very happy that this is happening. Okay, so as you may not have been aware while you were out, the season finale of Mr. Robot was postponed because apparently there's a scene in it that kind of mirrored...
What happened to those stuff?
Yeah, with the reporters.
I think they were just trying to spare Barrett from spoilers. They knew he was out of the country.
So,
he's an influential technology radio show guy.
Yes. I called Malik, or what's his name?
Malik.
I'm pretending not to know. We're
Sam
buddy, buddy. Sam.
Oh, Rami Malik.
Yeah, thank you, Rami Malik, and said, hey, ma'am, do what you can do to... That sounds how... Or actually, let's see. Given... all the events, let me just back off from that whole thing. Nothing happened. Postpone the show from our part here on Technology Bites.
Well, anyway, yeah,
but I'm glad it comes on tonight.
Are you DVRing it? Did you double check to make sure it's going to work?
Yes.
Yes, I'm going to get it to rent.
I sneak and watch it through my neighbor's window. It's totally legit. They don't mind so much.
So yeah, Mr. Robot coming on a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and Flickr.
Flickr has an F Society sticker that's very like you could barely see it.
Is that like a glow in the dark thing, or is
no,
that just like
just, it's just white?
White. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's got. I mean, that's
white so, underneath the Russian hacker sticker.
So he's got the Russian hacker sticker, which is you know definitely indicative of something that that ties into a thing, two things that Flickr really likes.
And it's
really
in Cyrillic, so you wouldn't know what it said unless you knew.
And he has the FreeBSD daemon. And then he has the icon for a fake hacking group.
Yes. Hold on. That's fake?
That's kind of fandom. That's kind of fanboyish there. You know?
Well, it just disturbs me that he's approaching that whole Lee stickering of the laptop thing. Whoa!
Oh, hey!
Whoa!
We all have F Society stickers now.
Yes. Okay.
That's awesome.
I'm going to have to go get a new laptop now.
Put that on my laptop.
Let's say you were talking about... Oh, yes. Fans, fandom, and then I hand you one.
I know. you converted us all.
This is awesome.
I wonder if that should go on my car.
No, really. That don't just like be careful where that goes. That is pure awesomeness.
Yeah, I found them on eBay. I'm sure they're not legit. You know, somebody with a vinyl cutting machine, but they look like they got a good copy of the logo. I mean, it looks like the real stuff that's on the show. And so I was going to order one, and I was like, no, I'm going to order two. I have one for my car and one for my laptop. And when I did that, it's like, oh, you saved this much in shipping, which was the amount in shipping, right? So it was like I paid shipping for one, and I got the second one for free. I'm like, well, if I'm going to do that, I might as well buy a bunch of them because I'm only paying shipping for one. So, yeah, I bought quite a few.
Thank you, Flickr.
Thank you, Flickr. I don't know. I think this needs to go on the car.
Yeah.
I could put the little white apple on his head. The little white apple sticker. It'll be
someone's on a watch list over this.
William Tell Society. All right. So anyway, so
is this the season finale?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's
not like a mid-season whatever, but this is it for season
finale. And I do believe that they have been signed up for a second season.
I heard three is what I heard. I heard that they signed up for two sight unseen. I heard the third one was granted.
Yeah, they got renewed for a second season before the first show actually aired. Although they'd been passing around for like a month on social media for free. So a lot of people had watched it.
I went out to find the first one, and it's gone.
Now it's gone, but it was there for like a month, and they renewed for a second season. And then Sam Ismail said that when he started writing this, he was going to write it as a feature-length movie, and he got about 60 pages into it and realized this is going to go on way too long for a movie. It'd be hours long. So then he decided to try to do it as a TV show, which he originally wasn't really all that excited about, but he had the script and it was too long for a feature film. So he said that the first season kind of doesn't even really cover Act One. So he said he's probably got at least three seasons, probably four, but there's a definite story arc. There should be a definite ending, and he doesn't want it stretched out like they had to do with Lost because they wanted
Lost
more money.
Really ended, and they
so
was like,
a couple seasons, they stretched it out. Like it was supposed to be one season and they made it into like three. So he doesn't want to do that. The other thing that's funny is they said, you know, normally an episode series is 13 episodes or sometimes more, but at least 13. And so USA said, don't you want like 13 episodes? And he's like, no, I only want 10. And they were like, but normally there are 13 episodes. You know, do you think you're just not going to have time? And he's like, no, I need 10. And the reason he needed 10 is because if he did more than 10, it would mess up his numbering system.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. they start from zero. They start counting from zero.
Yeah, so he's like,
cool.
He's like, yeah, so it's the first season, and, you know, so the first episode, when you get to the ninth one, it, you know, and then you get to the tenth one, well, it's two digits. It's 1.10 instead of 1.9. So he's like, so we did 10 episodes, well, because we started with zero. And I saw this when he was being interviewed. It was like at Google or something. And he's like, well, you know, because I started at zero. Well, because, and the guy interviewed goes, yeah, we're all programmers. Of course, you started at zero.
So here's my question. Like, a lot of people have, you know, like, lauded the show because it's been, like, quote, unquote, flawless as far as the tech used.
Not flawless.
Adam wouldn't say flawless.
Here's the question. So it's a lot of there are some jumps. When they do show screens, some of it's pretty legit. But here's the thing. The one thing I've noticed is, like, a lot of the commands will throw down. They'll be super close, but then they'll mess up, like, fairly easy things, like, for instance, like double ticks on, like, verbose commands. So, like, you know, you could use, like, a dash F, or you could do a, you know, you're like, let's just say tick F or tick tick F or tick tick force, and they're doing, like, tick force, to where if, like, someone just, like, typed it directly into a Unix terminal off the screen, it wouldn't quite work, but it gives the people that kind of know an idea, or are they just messing it up? I'm giving them too much credit
that they're messing up too, because, for example, in the one episode where Darlene, like, has to make an exploit really fast, and she's, like, dropping those thumb drives so people pick them up, put them in the computer. The guy realizes what's going on and stops it, and then Elliot's mad at her. He walks up to her, and he's like, what are you doing? What did you do? That didn't work. Like, what are you, just, like, some script kiddie now? Did you just go to Rapid 9 and grab something?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's you know he knows what he's talking about, but they're not using the actual real name. I mean, same thing, they would have to steal Steel Mountain.
Yeah, so
I
that's
mean,
the
even
question.
The logo is about the same. So,
well, at least they're not mean and doing something like, oh, you've got to hack the Unix machine, RM-FR*.
Grep!
I want them to use tracer T, and then all's going to be right with the world. That's all they've got to do.
Well, they had the same. Are you caught up?
I believe, yeah. I watched a lot of it on the trip on the way back.
Weren't we talking last week that they had to jump through some hoops to be able to show the scenes from the hackers movie?
Yeah, they said it took them, I don't remember anymore, it was like 4 or 6 weeks or something to get the rights to show that clip from Hackers in that one episode.
You know what we need to do? We need to invite I don't know if Christian Slater would show, but he might. We need to invite him to DEF CON before someone else does and say, like, hey, real hacker convention. Come hang out with us. We know Afflicted. It'll be cool.
Invite the entire cast alone, of hackers
yeah.
out.
That could be really cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little surprised. I mean, well, they might have. I don't remember when filming for this season wrapped. So maybe during DEF CON they were finishing the very last episodes or something. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't do some kind of marketing.
Yeah, it's been really well received, or through a party, or do something.
Yeah.
And I don't watch, like, a lot of other clips, but I was able to download a couple of clips. I think it was just, like, him talking. It might have even been, like, a Google Lunch kind of thing. And they were talking about his costume, because that's, I'd say costume, but, like, what Elliot wears, the main kind of protagonist, yeah. or however you want to see him. Narrator of the of
actually
the
they had a didn't you read about they had a huge thing at DEF CON. They scattered thumb drives all over the place with, like,
no, I got a lot of those
Bitcoin on them.
I don't know why my laptops are so hot, but the thumb drives are fun and free. No, they were talking about, like, you know, his decisions to dress, why he wanted to dress, because he, you know, was possibly, like, afraid of drones or things looking on him from. He just wanted to blend into a crowd. But what he got was he kind of got the hacker uniform. Like,
he also likes
kinda,
to hide.
Yeah, he likes to hide. Hiding. Kind of like an urban commando kind of thing is what he said he was after. And I'm like, if you show up to, like, DEF CON, there's a couple different looks. And probably, you know, one of the three or four major looks is combat boots, camo, you know, urban kind of junglist kind of guy. So they kind of nailed it. Intentionally or not.
Form follows function.
Beauty is function.
Well, so should we knock out some quick Apple stuff, or do we need to build up to the big Barrett time that's coming after the top?
Yes,
of the
Barrett
hour.
Time is dying in my dying laptop. I actually showed up a whole hour early to write it, and then realized I had no means of power.
You're lying.
I was here. You were here.
I saw you get here early, but I didn't know that's what you were working on.
Why else? I didn't just show up just to. I mean, I love quality time with you, but I got here early with a purpose.
That's why he walked in and was like, "Man, I'm glad I don't have to deal with any more Barrett times."
So I guess
it was fun to be on the show with you guys.
Did one of you guys drop this broken power supply outside?
I'm going to get a new laptop. Like, some halfway through the trip, my entire top row of numbers, like, if I hit a 1, it does 1 QA, which is kind of funny. I think, like, something's mushed from getting that entire top row of keys.
Maybe it was those free thumb drives.
I think
it's
so.
That new Rote 1 encryption on your laptop.
You've got dev random encryption.
Yeah. It's no good. It's new laptop time. Although I'm thinking about breaking ranks and maybe getting like the new Surface when it launches in possibly a month or two. And I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. But it's pretty Apple-y in here. Someone might need to like Windows it up a little bit. Microsoft.
That's Groovehouse's job.
It's a real Apple fest.
A little bit. Although I've got a Dell, although it's dead.
Yeah, right this, you know, I think if the
dude, I could have brought a charger.
The Windows people are like, if anybody's gonna break Windows back into Technology Bytes, have it not be Barrett, because it's gonna be like, oh yeah, I got the Surface. Oh man, I dropped the key thing, and now that doesn't work, and the lid doesn't close, and
all
the touch
circle.
Stuff's off by just a half an inch, and.
Well, I figure the touch, there's no keypad, or you can easily replace the keyboard. For the most part, it's kind of tablet-y kind of thing, if it's what I'm thinking it is. And I'm going to probably put Linux on it immediately. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I'm probably going to get a MacBook. The thing that's messing with me now is that the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air
are not that dissimilar.
They really aren't. It's like, well, do I want Retina? Are they going to do a refresh? Or, you know, so probably what I'm going to do is wait until right before they make everything awesome and then buy that model. Literally, I need a laptop now.
The week before.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to repeat history like I've been doing the last, you know, 8 years of the show, 10 years of the show. I want a backlit keyboard.
You want the most modern, up-to-date, state-of-the-art thing to break.
I do. Why break old tech?
KD5 wants you to get a Pi Top.
Yeah, I thought about that, but...
A Pi Top?
It's pretty cool. So you take a Raspberry Pi, and especially now that you've got like the B pluses or the Raspberry 2 B pluses or whatever they are, they're pretty quick. So the Pi Top is like this $200-$300 device that is more or less, it's a keyboard, and it's a, I don't know what kind of screen it is. It might be touch screen, and it's a little wireless card, and it's, you know, a little peripheral.
Are they
thing.
Really fast enough to be a functional?
No, not functional.
Computer?
It's fast enough to where if you got out in the field and you wanted to do, like, some packet capture, you wanted to, like, do a little bit of light, super light programming, or, you know, like, something good to give to, like, a nephew or a niece or a kid, but it would not be a functional laptop.
See, because I was thinking about using that as a desktop, but I started reading about it, and everybody's kind of like, yeah, it's not really quite there yet. Like,
did you ever install, like, Linux on, like, an 8086, like, with a math coprocessor or just something where it runs on it, but it really shouldn't be running on it?
Yeah, but I thought like the BeagleBone was supposed to be better.
BeagleBone's a lot better.
But even the BeagleBone I was reading is really not quite up to the task in some
ways. Well, the thing is to push like a GUI, to push like a desktop manager outside of like, you know, like XFWM or like something really lightweight, it's just a lot of processor. So what it's doing is it's chewing up all of its processor during the display instead of actually doing the real processing work. So it might look cool moving a window or jiggling a window, but once you get a few things going, everything just slows down to a halt. Once you spin up, because I think it's, I don't know if it's divvied up into cores anyone.
Yeah, that's not really what you want to do with a with a laptop or a desktop.
All right, well, there's the music telling us what we're going to do next, which is take a short break. And then we'll pray that everything continues to function and come back and have the perfect show. You're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And we'll be back.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return you to Technology Bites.
Bear time. Battery time.
That's it for battery time.
That's it for battery time. All right. Welcome back to the show. Glad you stuck around or tuning in. Fundraiser's coming right around the corner. Is it next week?
Or is it the week after? Hopefully the week after.
Hopefully you'll have a chance to settle in before we go back to that.
Yeah, we need one more show at full strength before we jump straight into fundraiser. I think just for general morale.
Yeah. All right. So let's see what Pete has to say here on our webpage. We have, do we want to go into, let's see, I have to go to the special link. And
shh, secret link.
Secret link. Still amazed at how many people are trying to log into geekradio.com every day.
Yeah, none of them can find the secret link.
None of them can find it. All right, so let's see if we can do this. I'll make sure that's up, and this is...
Bite of the Apple.
Yeah, I may just combine those two into one big one. Big, scary, happy...
Scary, happy time.
So Apple News. This one's interesting. I, frankly, I've never jailbroken an iPhone. I never had a reason to. In the early days when you could make it do some extra things, I could see the point. But at a certain point, it just doesn't really... And here's another reason not to... there is malware that's infecting jailbroken iPhones. It's stolen 225,000 Apple account logins, and some phones have been held for ransom.
Especially don't do it if you're Chinese.
KeyRaider, as the malware family has been dubbed, is distributed through a third-party repository of Cydia, which markets itself as an alternative to Apple's official App Store. Malicious code surreptitiously included with Cydia apps is creating problems for people in China and at least 17 other countries, including France, Russia, Japan, and the UK. It's disabled some infected phones until users pay a ransom and has made unauthorized charges against some victims' accounts. Researchers with Palo Alto Networks worked with members of the Chinese iPhone community, Wayphone, after members found the unauthorized charges. Basically, I think the lesson there is, unless you really know what you're doing, then maybe you don't want to jailbreak your iPhone.
I was thinking I was going to jailbreak mine just right before that article came out. I was thinking, you know, I need to go ahead and just be that guy and do it and, you know, get the bat.
What would you do with it?
Probably not enough to warrant getting, you know, brutally hacked.
Make some new Chinese friends.
I wanted to have the experience. I wanted to just. It looks like it's gotten really easy to do. And I just wanted to see what it would be like. I rooted my...
Really? Because it used to be really easy, and then it got progressively more difficult. Is it easy again?
I haven't followed it closely enough. Okay. I saw it get easier. I don't know that I saw it get hard. I see that they do it, then updates come out, make it harder to do it. And then it kind of, like, it's a roller coaster.
Well, because, like, version 4, somewhere in there, there was yellow snow, and that was really easy. And then a little later, they stopped it, and then somebody came out with red snow, and then they stopped that. And then I don't remember what came after that. There were a couple after that. It seemed like it was getting harder.
It was an adventure in learning how to do it with my Android phone when I did my Galaxy S phone, being able to do it, have it go badly, have to go back, unbrick it, and then actually get it to take. And the two things I got out of it, one, I got the experience, which I thought was kind of fun. This is like, I'm going to own this piece of technology. I'm going to assert my will that has been created by a lot of other people who have made it super, written out all the instructions how to do it. The other thing that I got out of it was I was able to tether before hotspots became real, real commonplace. I was able to use it on T-Mobile. And I remember using it one year at DEF CON to get all of my internets over my T-Mobile.
All of his internets.
So that no one else could get all of my internets from me at DEF CON. So, but I don't think I'm going to root my... I'm not going to jailbreak my iPhone now. I don't care about the warranty, but I do care about my... I do care about my data. I want all my data stolen by people I trust.
It looks like there is a good working exploit out there, but it's been put out by a team I've never heard of before. TAIG. TAIG. Not the people that did the different colors of snow.
So in other more mysterious Apple news, Apple is recruiting talent to bolster its Project Titan team. I wonder, does that have anything to do with like Attack on Titan which is rumored to be researching an electric vehicle. Over the past several weeks, the company has hired multiple employees from Tesla, Texas Instruments, and other companies in the automotive and technology industries, likely to join hundreds of others already working on the so-called Apple car. I think the name just gives it away. They're building a destructive machine that's going to ravage our world and turn it into a post-apocalyptic landscape, brought to you by Apple. And now on to the next week is the big, a week from, is it on a Wednesday? I think it was the 9th.
September 9th.
Yeah. So a week from today, they're doing it so that they want to be sure that we could speak on it immediately after, on the same day.
Everybody already leaked everything, I think. It's not exciting because everybody leaked it already.
Oh, that's true. The rumors seem to be, the rumors are that there will be a fourth-gen Apple TV announced and that the price of that will be under $200, but it's not clear if under $200 means $199 or $149.
Yeah, they said between $149 and $199, but they hadn't quite determined for sure when that leak happened what the price point would be.
And they also, with that new Apple TV, it's going to have a new remote that has motion sensors and features targeted at casual gamers. They said that basically the sum up on it is the next gen Apple TV will have an A8 processor, a native SDK for creating apps, and a motion sensor remote control with multi-axis sensors, complete with a touchpad on the top, physical buttons on the bottom, and a microphone for Siri. And for karaoke with Siri, which is they think will be a big kill. I made that up. That's not real. The remote control is thought to be likely to target casual gamers, and the current thought is that a game controller with a microphone, physical buttons, touchpad, and motion-sensitive controls could do this. You think? Such a device combined with Apple's purported upcoming streaming service and home automation could dominate the living room. It's interesting because, Sony and Microsoft, their entree into the living room is the Xbox and the PS4, or the Xbox and PlayStation devices. And then Apple's is the little cheap relative to those is the little cheat box. And so far, it seems like Apple may have a better opportunity to having the home automation and getting into people's living rooms than those others. So it'll be interesting to watch that. But the big rumors on that, you know, everybody knows there's going to be the iPhone 6S is going to come out. The other thing is there's rumors of they're back and forth about whether there's going to be the so-called iPad Pro, the 12-inch iPad. And there's also thought that there will be the iPad Mini 4, which will basically be taking the iPad Mini and making its specs match up with the iPad Air instead of being a little bit less of a machine than the iPad Air. I think they figured out that basically people want to buy whichever form size, and that that having the processor specs be less on the iPad Mini is maybe not a great idea. And so, you know, the plus side, now you can just imagine whatever other things you want for the rest of the for the next week. But that's all the rumory stuff I've got. Nobody, I think, has the if you watch the news going up into the getting closer to it, the rumors, the quote rumors and stuff that come out on say next Monday or Tuesday, they'll probably reveal most of what you're going to see on Wednesday. I don't think Tim Cook, I don't think, is as big as Steve Jobs was on the whole, oh, and one more thing kind of deal that Steve Jobs liked to do. Because a few times he did it very effectively, which is why people remember it, because it was a big, big deal when he did it.
You've also got to have one more thing ready.
Yeah, you got to have enough stuff, nice. You got to have something really surprising, because it's sort of like, and one more thing. Oh, here's a new iPhone. People would boo if you had the wrong one more thing. You know, you'd have all the, even though they're big fans and they came all the way up to California to see it and all that stuff, they would boo if it was something lame. Oh, we got this new USB hub. It matches your Mac.
One more thing, we're changing power converters.
We have a new we have a new mouse.
We have a new adapter.
More adapters.
Oh, yeah.
We come up with this special new adapter.
One more thing, we have USC. No, not USB-C, it's USC.
It's a special adapter that came up in cooperation with the University of Southern California.
It's Thunderbolt wire.
It doesn't translate. It doesn't transfer data or power.
No, that is another entirely different cable.
So, and it's oxygen free. It's the new conjunction with Monster.
It's all joking. So are they kind of going to USB-C now? Is that kind of Apple's way of the future on all the new hardware? Are they still going to have? Surely they're going to have at least one legacy port, right? Or are they even getting rid of those?
The MacBook has the one port, the USB-C, and I wonder where they're going from there. When they come out with the new Skylake, versions of different laptops, I wonder what's going to be. I wonder if they're going to dump the. I would think that maybe it'd have USB-C and Thunderbolt, but that would be it. That it wouldn't have a regular USB port.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to do on the Airs, because there's not a lot of room for ports. They've been going down, and I really kind of hope it's not just a single connector that you then have to, you know, break out all the other adapters for. But I guess
although they increased the number of ports on the Air from the first one, because the first one just had a single USB. Mini display port or micro display port or something. It was a weird one. It was micro display port, not mini, and headphone jack. That was it. That's all it had. And it was in a little drop down.
Yeah, that was kind of funky. I remember that. You had that one.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe the one more thing will be a 20-pound battery with all the ports you like that you hook up to your MacBook Air to get 40 hours of battery life and every port you want to bring with you while you travel. And just kidding, but that could work.
It could.
Now you've got to wonder. Apple. The thing with Apple is they are sitting on a mountain of money, and at some point they've got it. You know, they have to do the next big thing. They don't have to right now. I'm not. I don't want to jump the gun on that, but. At some point, they have to take the next leap to doing more new things, because they can't just keep making new laptops and new iPads and iPhones, although they're making a lot of money at it right now, but long haul, it's going to go farther than that. And so you just wonder the thing. So now, if they really want to, if they find something new and want to commit to it, kind of like Steve Jobs, like with solid state drives, where basically they bought up the market, they bought up the capacity as it was developing before anybody else did, so that then when the MacBook Air came out and everybody else rushed to copy it, they had a heck of a time because Apple owned all the capacity to get more drives to do the same thing. If Apple finds another thing like that and wants to bet heavily, they have enough money to basically dominate an industry. One of the rumors that which sort of reminds me not about Apple dominating, but one of the rumors on the Apple TV that's sort of interesting is that it won't do 4K, which is funny because the spec is sort of all over the place, but how many devices can you really get? You know, where can you get 4K content to watch on a 4K television right now? Still, after how long they've been out, it strikes me as kind of odd.
Do you know what the bitrate is for 4K?
If only you had a computer you could connect to the internet.
Yeah. Can someone lend me a piece of paper?
If and only there were a Barrett time for that.
Well, I know 16 that megabits Netflix per second. Has got is working on
actually,
4K.
Let's see. Recommended video bit rates for uploads, 2160p or 4K is 35 to 45 megabits per second. Video bit rate, high frame rate, 53 to 68 megabits per second. That's upload encoding settings, I guess. I don't know. Video bit rate. Hey, goodness, this is all just hurting my brain.
The adoption of 4K streaming will be stalled by bandwidth limits.
Does it actually say that in the source?
Netflix's current bit rate for 4K is 15.6 megabits per second, which I think, it, you know, in the States, the problem is there's a whole lot of people who have who 15 megabits per second is their entire downstream, and that's not going to work.
Some people can't even get that. I mean, you get out of the major metropolitan areas, and if you're on any kind of satellite or even like old ADSL, you're just not going to get that.
So, not clear. I guess Netflix does do some 4K streaming, but that seems to be the only place that you really get it. It's not like anybody has 4K Blu-rays or any of that. One of the things, I didn't see it in the other, I mentioned last week I watched the final Hobbit movie. And in that one, for the first time, it was like that was one of the ones where they shot it in that like high frame rate and high resolution. And it did make the makeup on the different dwarves look makeup-y as opposed to kind of real like in the rest of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit stuff. So you just wonder what happens with some of that. Anyway.
All right. So have we got the bite of the apple taken care of?
I think so. I think so.
That apple has been bitten.
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Okay, there's an interesting grab bag. So Barry's looking for
buy.
Looking for a new new laptop. I found this one. Asus has an all new flagship gaming laptop that's water cooled. It's got Intel's overclocking ready K-series Skylake CPUs and comes with a full water cooling system to help keep it chilly.
Barrett doesn't have a choice. Even if he wanted to try it or buy it, he would fry it.
I had a water cooled gaming machine once, but you kind of had to do it up on end, and it had two buttons, and you'd push them, and it would do these little jets of water, and then you'd try and get little balls.
Try to get the hoops.
Yeah, exactly. I had hoops, and I had the basketball things, too.
The only other details we have on it is it's got NVIDIA GeForce GTX graphics and a 4K resolution on the screen, is what Asus says. They showed a picture of it, and it looks like a laptop mounted on some kind. It looks like a laptop mounted on like a big dock with speakers.
Probably not going to be light, I'm assuming.
Behind it. Not particularly portable, no. But but think about it. It'll be so elite. And then you can put Linux on it and have, you know, that 17-inch 4K screen for your command line interface.
However, having lugged large water-cooled rigs around before, if this is even like slightly carryable, there could be a market for that, just because people might want to go to LAN parties without, you know, like hurting themselves or, you know, having to lug a 100.
Yeah, but nowadays you don't have to carry a CRT.
No, just the machines. There's a full tower resurgence again, I've seen. Which is, you don't see it out in public because no one wants to carry them out. But there are like some nice high quality, you know, high end cases that, you know, you can spend four figures on a computer case these days. And there's like a guy that designed the Ferrari stuff is designing computer cases. They're modular, but I'm not going to spend that much, I don't think.
Okay, well, so if you want to go super lightweight, then there's another approach. Intel's pint-sized compute stick PC that was a surprise when they launched the Core M stuff. They also announced a Core M based version of the compute stick at the IFA show. Since it uses so few watts, basically it's a USB stick, so then you could just go around and go, hey, can I borrow your monitor? Does that monitor have a USB port? Can I borrow it? I need to put my computer on it. Let's see, the chip is apparently very good for low power video decoding. They showed the Skylake chip decoding 15 4K videos and compared it with a machine with a pair of NVIDIA Titan chips performing the same task, and they struggled. So you could do that. I don't know. I guess that the price is
wasn't
announced, and the ship date wasn't announced.
Oh. Hmm.
You've seen there's like a, I guess for a couple of years now, there's been a number of Linux ones that kind of do the same thing. I'm assuming that the specs are quite a
lower. What are the
price
points?
For the Linux ones?
Yeah.
They start around like $30 and you can spend up to around 70 or 75.
Are they functional?
They're fairly, what a lot of people do is it's you can kind of stream some video. Some people put Plex on it, but most people do is they just get it and it's like a low powered, you know, like Raspberry Pi equivalent, but a lot faster than about the same speed as a Pi, probably.
My tertiary or something desktop at home has decided that it, for some reason, it doesn't like the memory in it. If I take half the memory out, it works better, but if it's full bank memory, it dies. I don't know why. So I'm thinking maybe got a, like electric surge or something. I don't know what happened to it, but. Anyway, so I was thinking about getting a replacement. So that's why at one point I was thinking about maybe using I don't really think about Pi because I figured it'd be too low powered, but I looked at the BeagleBone, like the BeagleBone Black and stuff, and then I looked at some other company that makes them out of Korea, I think. It was a better processor, and it was pretty cheap. But the thing is, then you had to buy the power adapter, and you had to buy this other thing, and pretty soon it was like, oh, I'm already spending, instead of $30-$40, I'm spending $100. So at that point, I might as well go look at like legitimate small, you know, desktops.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what the compute stick, what price they've put it at. I mean, that could be pretty. I could see where some businesses that could be pretty cool. Basically, if you just carry around your computer in your pocket and then hook up, and they could have keyboards and monitors. Around. I don't know. I guess I don't know how I wonder how you hook up keyboard up to all that.
Maybe they might have, does it say anything about them having wireless on board or anything like
could
that?
Could have Bluetooth.
Yeah, I wonder Bluetooth. If it has Bluetooth, but then that would use up, well, I guess if it hooked up, if the processor's only using 4.5 watts, then you might have some extra power for running Bluetooth.
Or as long as
USB.
You had two USB ports, the other USB port could go out to a USB hub that could go to a mouse
like
and a
pass through something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't mind checking it out when they drop it. Assuming it's like.
Are you going to drop it when you check it out?
No. What it needs to be light enough
after
it can take a bounce.
Out.
Yeah. Little extra bouncy room in there would be nice.
Someone might fit into the try category.
But it depends on the cost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other part is. As they, when they do these kinds of things, is when the next model comes out, then the old ones tend to, when you're already talking about something that's in the low couple $100, then the price tends to drop pretty far on the quote obsolete models, which nowadays the amount of power in an obsolete model is nothing to sneeze at.
You kind of have to get the community behind it, too. I mean, that's the thing. You can have some really awesome hardware that might make it out there, but unless you've got people that are, like, porting different distributions to it or, you know, getting software to run on it, you're kind of stuck with – you could be stuck with abandonware, depending on what they ship it with.
Since well, I guess with the Intel, it would seem like you'd be less likely to get – to be burned, but
they did, I guess it
depends how they do the motherboard or,
yeah.
Or, you know.
About 6 months ago, or maybe it was even closer to a year ago, Intel and I want to say TI kind of got in on the act, and Microsoft, they all dropped like slightly, about twice the price of an Arduino, but Arduino competitors. So Microsoft had one that was like .NET powered.
Yeah.
Intel had one, I think it was called the Galileo or something along
those
lines.
Right. I remember that.
And they were just $10 or $15 higher than, you know, like a Raspberry Pi. They were close to the price of like a BeagleBoard Black. But they just didn't go anywhere because no one really ever said, oh, wow, I want to go, like, you know, do .NET on an Arduino, or, oh, wow, I want to go do this. So, you know, I picked up a couple of different models just more out of novelty, but those haven't really gone anywhere. And that's what I'm afraid, you know, you have to get that developer community behind it, or else, or you've got to, you know, put up the money to write the software for it and support it. But unless you kind of get that going, a lot of these devices, even though they might be awesome hardware, they're just going to be kind of more sizzle. I mean, I'm sorry, more fizzle than sizzle.
Bullshit.
All right. Well, on the phone front, this is all also from IFA, which is in Berlin. Jason Chen, the Taiwanese CEO, the Taiwanese company CEO for Acer, showed off a new Predator 6 smartphone and Predator projector, which will let gamers do more with their phones. The smartphone contains a 10-core processor for MediaTek, as well as 4 gigs of RAM, memory, and a 21-megapixel camera. I think when they say 4 gigs of RAM memory, they mean the operating system runs in that RAM as opposed to the total memory.
I was going
to
say, 10 cores, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that's the case, can we just install Ubuntu on that, and I'll use that as a desktop?
That's a Ubuntu phone?
It runs Google's Android. The Predator 6 runs Android software and will be available early next year, though only in select markets. Acer will likely introduce the phones first in Asia and then determine other markets, and they declined to reveal the pricing. The Predator projector, a gaming laser projector, will let gamers display images on a wall to better face off against each other or see action in the game.
It's a laser.
Laser.
So you can do, like, asteroids. or Battle Zone.
Or Laser Floyd on your ceiling.
So I'm still reeling over the whole 10 core. That's not like 10 isn't like 2 binary, right? That's actually 10 cores. Or it's core made out of 10.
It's a processor
from
MediaTek. So it's I don't know if MediaTek is, you know, maybe their cores, maybe 3 of them are Apple cores.
I was going to say, maybe it's, Apple maybe it's one processor core and 9 math coprocessors.
The projector says with just 50 centimeters of space from a wall, which that's let's see, that's the, what, 18 inches, or that's not that far. 50 centimeters, it's like 2.5 centimeters per inch.
Yep.
So that's okay. So say 20 inches within a couple feet of a wall, you can project a 120-inch screen, according to an Acer executive.
Pretty wide angle.
It's a wide angle. Yeah.
But I guess with the laser thing, maybe that's what solves it.
I like how they confuse people by going centimeters to inches on there, just to like make everyone kind of scratch their
head.
They couldn't say with just 8 inches away this much, but they've got to go like, no, this weird unit versus this weird unit. Goes, wow, that sounds really good. But you do the math, and it's like, eh. I'm not doing the math.
Well, plus the 120-inch screen, which, I think that we've kind of come to the time when they need to say the, instead of saying the diagonal measure of a screen, I know people like one number, but it should be the width versus the width and the height, because then you know what you're getting. You know, the square screen.
Yeah,
I think they like it because the numbers get seem larger than they are when you go diagonal.
Yeah, because it depends on if you do a 3x4 or 4x3 or 16x9 like diagonal. I mean, I guess nowadays most screens are 16x9, but
because only say 70-inch screen, it's like that's 70 inches from one corner to the other corner, so that's the longest measure you can come up with, and where if you're getting like a projector, you know, if you're doing a projection screen, when you get the measure of the screen, it's the width of the screen. So when you get a 120-inch screen, that's 10 feet wide at the bottom, and then whatever height it needs to be to have the right ratio.
6 inches.
the 200:1 super wide
panorama screen. Mode.
That's like where they couldn't. That was part of why they couldn't bring like Lawrence of Arabia to TV screens without doing horrible pan and scan where you couldn't see even the two characters in a conversation were too far apart to put on the screen at the same time. Or it was letterboxed so bad that the bars were bigger than the screen. I saw, because it was done in that like super Panavision. So it's like, I don't know, it must have been like 30:1 width to height. And so I saw pictures where they showed them putting it on like TV sets. So it's on this little square TV set, and there's an inch and a half high deep band that goes across the middle of the screen.
It was reminiscent of my first DVD experience way back in the 90s, that kind of a thing. When square TVs were kind of more prevalent. No one really had the 16:9 or any of the other ratios other than square.
Four by three?
Is it 4:3? So it's a little bit not quite square, but it seemed fairly square.
Yeah, now we have 16:9, although I think the real movie ratio is 21:9.
I don't know, there's 2.35:1 or something. I don't know how that works out. And there's a bunch.
There's all kinds, and the like oversize and all that other stuff, yeah. So, and then the 4K doesn't really help because it doesn't really say anything. That talks, 4K is about the resolution, not the size. So I still, the thing, I guess the other thing with 4K that gets me is they seem to be going the wrong, a 27-inch 4K monitor, you get a pretty picture, but for usefulness as a person using it with a computer, it's, wouldn't you rather have a 40-inch 4K that would give you basically four 20-inch 1080p screens that you could have used for real estate? So if it's a 27-inch, yeah, you could put like four screens on it, but they're going to be tiny.
I think more for that, it's more for like eye strain and just being able to go ever so slightly smaller and still be able to see it. And also the price point, like that 27-inch or 32-inch or whatever. So that, I think we're about to outfit a lot of our developers with 4K monitors. Mainly because a lot of them are just asking for it, and it's like it's an easy thing to do. But
that way
also
they can
just
sit closer to the monitor and still read it.
Yeah, maybe. All I know is, if you do heads down coding for like more than 4 or 5, 6 hours, your eyes start to go a little bit, and things get kind of tough. But with those displays, what I've stared at them for a little while, it that doesn't happen because you're not having to fill in the gaps of the pixels, and you think it doesn't make much of a difference, but given a little bit of time, it does. Like people remember like read on an old cell phone from 4 years ago. And then read on like a paper white, with like e-paper. And it's almost the same difference when you're looking at pixels.
Just make sure you get the one with the 60 megahertz refresh rate instead of the 30.
Yeah, because then you're back. That's a whole different kind of headache.
All right. And then the final try, buy, or fry thing. I don't know that it's available. In the article I found, they don't say any place in Houston, although there are companies selling it canned. It's a new way to have coffee. Nitro coffee, and no, that's not with nitroglycerin. Basically it's slightly effervescent nitrogen infused coffee, ice cold coffee on tap. They treat it with nitrogen or carbon dioxide under high pressure, then chill it in a keg and serve it draft with a foamy head like a Guinness.
I think Guinness is a good comparison. Like a beer. Yes. Yeah, because
it's creamy. They said because
Guinness is on always has to be on nitro taps. Like you can't serve Guinness unless you have a nitrogen tap. That's the only way Guinness will allow you to serve it. So other beers use just carbon dioxide or whatever taps, but you can get other stuff on nitro. But Guinness has to be on nitro, which is why it has the tiny bubbles that sink. and it gives it a creamier mouthfeel.
Well, you usually also infuse it after it comes out of the keg too. So it's like you'll have a canister of nitro, and then you'll have like the keg of, you know, whatever you have, and that's how you can have like, you know, like Left Hand is that a lot of times they'll have like the Left Hand milk stout will be on nitrogen, or this will be on nitrogen.
Right.
So it's got to be kind of brewed for it, set up for it. But then you've got to have that secondary nitrogen canister. So I'm wondering if they don't have a secondary canister, or if they're just putting that much nitrogen into that keg of coffee that it's keeping that, you know, that effervescence, and it's just like more of a cream. It sits up like a cream. The bubbles don't go away. It just kind of sits there. So I could see how that could be really good.
They said it seems sweeter and less acidic than large batch cold brew, equal parts chocolatey and silky smooth. They said it's almost that it almost tastes like a beer, even though there's no alcohol in it.
I've had some, locally, Eighth Wonder makes Rocket Fuel, which is a Vietnamese coffee porter. That's pretty much like drinking Vietnamese coffee. I mean, it's a beer, but on nitro, yeah, it tastes like a coffee.
There are some canned, and the odds are that since a lot of places are doing it, that Starbucks will soon follow. Cold brew seems to be a new thing. One warning for you is some say this coffee is strong with a capital S, blaming nitrogen for possible increased absorption rates of the caffeine. As in, you might make it halfway through your glass of nitro and feel like you just downed two full cups of espresso. Some people, you know, it's not been verified, but some people say that's what happens.
I think you've got to just drink it fast enough. You've got to chug it before it starts bouncing out of the glass because you've got the jitters because you can no longer control the handshake. So it's,
I don't know. That sounds too loco, or is that four loco?
DEFCON, here we go.
But yeah, there's Stumptown Coffee has a canned version, and then
Stumptown Coffee sir.
There's another company called Cuvée Coffee that it calls theirs Black and Blue in nitro cans. So there's one to watch out for. I think that's definitely a try. Ways to have coffee that might be super strong and kind of beer-like.
And could injure your health? Yes.
That seems,
I'm in.
Seems right up the geek alley.
Maybe we could put some beer in it too.
I wonder if we can find some for the,
Let's kill all of our fan base in one fell caffeinated swoop.
Get Cone to see if he'll see if he can come up with some.
I have to look into it. If we could score a nitrogen tank, I know there are some people in town that make iced coffee, and I wonder if
Cone's has a nitro tap.
Does he?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think he does. But we could probably, you know, from homebrewers, I bet I could
probably find somebody to bring one.
If anyone's listening, yeah. Like, I don't know how you get a hold of the show, but Facebook page or message us to do something. Go over to Jay's house.
At night.
Knock, 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 knock.
The other thing I saw that
I'm having a problem with my computer. Jay! Hello! Why are all the lights off? What is that?
I know you're in there.
You've seen there's a video. It's fairly viral. It's in German, but it's helium-infused beer.
Which is fake, unfortunately.
Oh, is that
Snopes debunked it. They're just joshing with you. You can't do that, unfortunately. Because you have to, if you think about it, to be able to get that amount of helium in your lungs, you would have to like swish the beer in your mouth and somehow inhale the helium coming out of it. You're putting it in your stomach. So if anything, you might have like some high-pitched burps. But I think that's about all that it would do. I was super excited when I saw that, so immediately I went out to see where I could get it, and then the first four links were just debunking it.
Well, the guys doing it were good actors, because they really did seem surprised by it and like people trying it. Internet, why do you lie to us?
And that liquid that you can inhale into your lungs, then you can breathe underwater like in the abyss, that turns out to be bunk too. So I'm, you know.
Really? I thought that
No, that's
not. You've got to know, though, just the liquid. You've got to have the whole apparatus.
Oh, the liquid
thing. Yeah,
yes,
just the liquid thing.
Helium thing.
No. Too many things on the internet are bunk. Go figure.
Everything's a lie.
That's why Snopes will never go out of business.
Because there's so many that you really want to believe. Like, there have been a few that I'm like, I really want that to be true. And then it's like, nope. And helium beer being one of them. So.
Well, the nitro coffee thing's real, so know that. Even though I found it on the internet, it's from a fairly legitimate place. it's from Bon Appetit, so they know snooty foodie stuff.
Now, in times of need, I will say that I've done a certain person in town, a certain place in town sells iced coffee concentrate that you're supposed to cut with a lot of water. So sometimes I'll cut that with like sparkling water, like a Topo Chico, and the caffeinated. Concentrated iced coffee does hit a lot quicker. Like if I'm, you know, if I need a couple more hours of doing work.
Yeah, I remember when I was in college, one of my roommates who was actually in the same program as me, we had like two or three tests coming up, and he drank a lot of coffee anyway, but it was late at night, and he was like, I gotta study, I gotta stay up, I don't have time to be drinking two pots of coffee. So he had instant, so he just poured like a pot's worth of instant in a cup, and he poured in just enough water to like
sludge,
make it sludge, liquid sludge. And he was like, this is like six cups of coffee like at once. He's like, all right, here we go. And he did it, and yeah, he freaked out, and he basically went and drank the amount of water immediately that he could have made the pots with.
Can someone Google caffeine toxicity for me, please?
Once on a long car trip, my daughter, she took 5-hour energy, and that did work. It woke her back up while she was driving. Then she made the mistake that was pretty obvious, but you know, people have to learn for themselves. She got another one. It's like, no, that you can do one, and it's going to give you, you know, it's going to wake you up and give you energy for the first 5-hour hit. But after that, at some point, you have to sleep. And when you take the second one, it just gives you all the horrible side effects of too much stimulant, you know, where you just feel jittery, too edgy, but you're not really, except you're also sleepy.
Wouldn't you just dream faster?
So it just, so that didn't work. But the first one worked.
There's a really cool cameo. There's a film out there. I think it's called Coffee and Cigarettes. And there's a lot of different people in it. It's black and white. But there is a Bill Murray with Wu-Tang in there talking about coffee. And I know a lot of IT people in there that could completely relate, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, cold brew thing looked interesting to me, and it takes interesting equipment. It's not
a pager. Whoa! Oh, Motorola pager. Whoa, two-line green text, green LCD.
Flickton's pager has been going off. Which
Something's wrong in Gotham City.
Alarming in the fact that he has a pager. Sorry, Peter.
What, did the Commodore 64 at work crash? Or
this could be important.
I'm actually on call, so I have the on-call pager.
And they're calling you, and they're calling the afflicted signal is up.
Pager service is down. Help us, afflicted.
We found on the internet. No, like I said, cold brew coffee, not the nitro thing goes a little bit farther, but the cold brew thing looks interesting, except the problem is it takes lots of time to really do it right. It's from the stuff I've seen where, I don't know, I need it faster. They need a machine that does it quicker, like the geek way. But anyways, right. Well, should we move on to the ultimate segment of the show? I only got a couple more stories, and then we're going to have to fill the rest.
All right. Well, we'll have to think of something to talk about.
Uh-oh.
And I'm sure we could do that. We don't have Motormouth with us tonight, so we
missed. My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious.
This one sort of fits in the kind of blurry edge between sort of news, try buyer fry, and science. So I stuck it in science. This guy wanted to figure out, he wanted to create an image, the biggest pixel size of a ping image in the smallest number of bytes. So what his goal was to create an image that could be downloaded, but whose pixel buffer would be too big to store in the RAM of a PC. So it's a BZIP2 file of 420 bytes that uncompresses to a ping image of 50.625 gigapixels, which if represented as a pixel buffer of 3 bytes per pixel, takes about 141.4 gigabytes from a 420-byte file to 141.4 gigabytes, and you can download this. You can download this image, and the guy, the part I like on this, well, he says the image is almost entirely zeros with a secret message in the center. He says we gain an extra factor of 8 pixels by using a 1-bit color space. Even with this maximum compression, the ping file is basically a long string of 0 bytes. BZIP2 has a run length pre-processing step that crunches these megabytes into a few hundred bytes. The things he has as things to try with this image that's 420 bytes, upload as your profile picture to some online service and see what happens to their image processing scripts. His other suggestion is set as your website's fave icon. Which would crash browsers that don't check the size of the file, check the size of the image for your fave icon. The fave icon is supposed to be like 16 by 16 pixels or something, or 8 by 8. And so this 420 bytes would look okay until it tried to decompress it. And the link that's related reading is defending libpng applications against decompression bombs.
I was going to say that sounds like a decompression bomb. That exact same attack.
So that now see that's something they need to use on Mr. Robot. A decompression bomb. I guess that'd be one way you could get to like a buffer overflow exploit or something.
Yeah, or blue disks or just all kinds of things, yeah. What a lot of people will do is they'll do something like that, but get it, you know, put in like a package manager to where when someone comes over and says, okay, we're gonna download all this stuff on our scheduled time and start decompressing and then build the libraries, that's the last thing it ever does. Because then it just goes to swap and then just things get slow.
It's the computer equivalent of, does this rag smell like chloroform?
Just about. Or, you know, there's like those little bitty, you know, capsules that have little spongy animals in there that you can get, like, you know, the grocery store. This may be going way back. I think they're still out there. But, you know, you throw them in water and they grow to like 100 times the size. It would be like, you know, going into a room or into someone's car and throwing that in there with a little bit of water and the thing just blows up and you can't move. You can't do anything. You can't twitch. You can't scratch any itches. You're pinned down. That's kind of what it does.
Awesome. And final story, there's a company called ARXPAX, A-R-X-PAX. When they unveiled their hoverboard last year, there was a hunch about what it was. But the first that Gizmodo had a hunch that this was but the first demonstration of the company's new magnetic field technology. So their thought was, why was ARXPAX really messing around with magnets? For one, to build a tractor beam. Yeah. Today, ARXPAX is announcing a new partnership with NASA, which wants to use hover engine technology to capture and manipulate microsatellites. So, in other words, NASA and ARXPAX are going to create a magnetic tractor beam, although a small one. So, you know, for those who, you know, I don't think we talked about it when they made their debut in 2014. The device, which actually can hover off the ground, was the first application of the company's patent-pending magnetic field architecture technology, MFA. The principle behind it is simple. A hover engine generates swirls of electricity in a conductive surface to produce a concentrated magnetic field. That magnetic field induces an opposing field in a conductive material below, and voila, liftoff. And it's not – the thing is it's not that easy because of the kind of interaction with the fields and that kind of stuff. On some levels, the hoverboard was a success, but it was no Back to the Future. The thing only worked on a special metallic surface. It made loud screeching noises, and its battery life was pretty bad. But it was a proof of concept, and it does demonstrate that the MFA concept – for instance, one of the things I think they could do with it is levitating houses to protect them from earthquake damage or using magnetic fields to attract satellites to one another. So they're thinking NASA's working with it to do linking up CubeSats, lightweight 10 by 10 centimeter satellites that NASA and other researchers are using to monitor the Earth and that we may eventually deploy to explore distant worlds. The CEO said that CubeSats are in close proximity already. We're trying to figure out how do you link them, connect them, and move them around relative to one another. So, you know, whether we're studying our planet's climate or exploring the surface of an asteroid, there are obvious benefits to a coordinated team of satellites. But, of course, some of the other details are kind of sparse. It's not clear how they're going to power the tractor beam, and it's not clear what sort of range we'll achieve. But it does seem like a worthy project, and if we're ever going to build an epic, you know, Star Trek-size tractor beam, then you got to start with something. So, I, you know, that was Star Trek. The nice that they had the great ideas that then when you start to really think about, get a lot more complicated. Because what if you're, you know, what if the ship's in Star Trek? So it means they've got metal in them if it's a magnetic tractor beam. Because if they're all like carbon fiber or something, that doesn't, magnets don't do anything to that, right?
Right.
And then the transporter, you know, what the transporter really is it totally destroys the person on the pad and then creates an exact duplicate with identical memories on the surface.
Yeah, but who needs a soul? That's fine. It's over quickly.
The analog transporter where they throw them into a big grinder and then reassemble the goo on the planet's surface.
However, you are right, though. I mean, a lot of the stuff that was pure sci-fi, like communicators, you know, cell phones, pretty much. And I guess we're now getting into being able to talk to the computers with Siri and with, you know, things like Echo and with OK Google and with Cortana and, you know, everything that's out there. So we're getting there, but I'm still not going to get transport myself from anywhere to anywhere else.
Yeah, and the computer doesn't – the answers – imagine how different Star Trek would have been if it was hooked up to the internet in the 60s. Right now they ask a question, and of course the computer has the one, like, true right answer, as opposed to the kind of, you know, answer one of 23 million on whatever query you did.
Or I want to see him go into, like, you know, a big Borg confrontation or go fight some Klingons, and suddenly pop-ups start showing up on the heads-up display all across the window. You know, just a little bit of reality. Alien adware.
True. So that's all I got.
Well, that's going to be plenty, I think.
5 minutes to fill.
Who's Phil?
Who's Phil?
Well, I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks, I'm hoping to be able to come over and get whatever cabling and stuff we need to set up the kind of remote.
All right, permanent. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we are trying to nail down an idea or a plan for our 20th anniversary party. And so I think we're going to do it sometime in October, and we're going to do it at Cons. I don't know what day we're going to do it. I don't know if it'll be the first Friday, if we're going to knock it to a Saturday or something. The weather should be getting cooler. And we're going to probably have it up on the roof of the parking garage there, weather permitting. And if you have any ideas or stuff you'd like to do, or if you'd like to participate, we're just going to try to invite as many people as we possibly can, and maybe do it as a themed nerd event, and maybe have some giveaways for good costumes or something. And I think we're going to recruit Flicted to be the DJ. Once we get approval from Loopy Low.
He's promised to play things that only Loopy Low likes.
No, he hasn't. Maybe we should get a big inflatable screen and show, I don't know.
Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot, that could work. Or else just a selection of various clips of computer hackery being done from movies, old and new, accurate and not.
I might have a projector ready. I need a computer to hook it up to. But yeah, I'm gonna, you know, start putting that together on Friday, the Geek Gathering this Friday. Gonna talk to Cohn about not nailing down a date for that and trying to do it. But if you're listening and you want to participate or have ideas, you can go to geekradio.com and contact me that way, or Page Flicted,
or even come out this Friday and talk.
Yeah,
talk,
come out this Friday and talk ideas. To us about. So
that's the main thing. If you want to show that, hey, I want to help contribute and be there at the 20th. Coming 1 month before and showing us that you can be there and help out, that would be cool too. But we'll probably talk about some ideas.
Yeah.
And maybe look at that upper deck thing and see if there's a place to sort of block off that would be specifically for whatever.
We've thrown. I've been involved with like scooter rallies and other things that have been up on top. So if anything, we're going to have too much space. We might want to make sure that there's some way to make it look smaller than it is because it's pretty huge up top.
Yeah. Well, I think if we could get some stuff set up, and maybe we could get some of the maker people to show up.
Spread the word.
Yeah. I was say if you happen to be listening to us and watching Mr. Robot, maybe it's during a commercial or something. It's been said that make sure that you watch past the credits and watch after the credits.
For
tonight's episode.
Okay.
Now I don't know if it's just like, oh, we're going to show you something from season two, or if there's actually something that ties into something.
Watching through the credits, that has become a real thing, especially in Marvel movies, mm-hmm. apparently, and other movies as well. You get the feeling like you should stick around through the credits to see something. They did it on television. There was the TV adaptation of the Hannibal stories, Hannibal the Cannibal. There was a TV series called Hannibal, which was pretty good, pretty stylized, pretty gruesome, and canceled. It didn't get renewed, so they wrapped it up, and they had a little egg,
Easter egg at the end.
So if you watched Hannibal, and you liked it, and you watched the season or series finale, and you did not stick through the credits, you missed a great scene.
So I like kind of like that. I've gotten kind of trained in sticking around for credits when I go see a live movie. Although, I mean, that kind of all came around with CDs and like them having 99 minutes or whatever, however many minutes they had to do it. So they would, you know, bury tracks 15 minutes, 20 minutes into it.
Right.
I think they should do that in the movies. Just like do the credits, keep the room black, and like 30 minutes into it, pop up a little. Because you know, the hardcore fans will stick around.
Ferris Bueller was one of the first ones I remember doing that.
And he came back and talked.
Now, I mean, I remember like Smoking the Bandit or Cannonball Run or something. Something with Dom DeLuise.
They would do gag reels.
They would do gag reels like during the credits. But Ferris Bueller's, I don't think there was any. But then at the very end,
he said, "Like, go home already."
Yeah, yeah. He's like, "What are you doing still here? Go home."
Yeah, where the I think the first one I remember that had any kind of content towards the night coming movie or whatever, I think was at the end of and they didn't show a scene. It was just a sound thing. The screen goes black. And on one of the Star Wars prequels, it was kind of the ultimate cool geeky you had to be listening for. But then it was the the Darth Vader breathing sound, and that was it at the end. And it was actually kind of worth seeing through the credits to hear it because we didn't know what was coming when we saw the movies that did follow or whatever. That when they got worse, but. And then it seemed like that opened the door where it was like, now we need to have people stay till after the credits to see, give them a reason why they stayed and throw them some bone. Lucas didn't do it as well as others, but yeah, Marvel seems to really, they tip their next movie or they tip the next kind of big thing at least, or have some kind of cryptic clue in it.
The Star Wars marketing hype machine seems to be in full effect. Like even like I heard stuff going out the Astrodome, Minute Maid Park, where they're like, hey, come out and wear your Star Wars outfit and get this and all this different stuff. So I think we're getting into that season.
Well, it's in December, so it's getting close. They've already got the Christmas stuff out, so.
Well, they've already had the big, I think it's live streaming right now, the unwrapping every toy for the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's online. You can Google it. It's really happening. But it's all the different, all the toys for the new one. So it's the little, like, soccer ball robot. And
I was wondering when they would come out with those. If it'd be before the movie or after it, or at the same
time. So now you can do your stop motion knockoff movie before it even comes out. Your Lego version of the movie.
We're watching the Simpsons add water increases 100 times actual size. Bart sells his soul scene from The Simpsons. So yes, they're still out there. You can find them at the grocery store, I'm pretty sure. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're glad you could be a part of Technology Bites. Come to the Geek Gathering this Friday. Details are online. You can find them on our webpage. We'd love to see you. We'll be back next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And I'm Barrett.
And we're out of here.
Hi, I'm Molly Stentz, news director at WORT-FM in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm also a KPFT donor. Are you? KPFT is such an important station. It's a bright, shining star in the constellation of independent grassroots stations across the country. Stations that support your right to free speech. We can keep KPFT strong and free for everyone. You can help. This fall, KPFT is holding its fall fund drive. Let's kick it off with a bang. Pledge now at kpft.org. And thanks from all of us all over the country who listen to KPFT.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.